Karkarin and Karkaris. It's a great white.
Welcome back to another episode of the Chainsaw Enema Show. I'm Johnny B. Ghoul.
And I'm Misfit Mike.
Tonight, Misfit Mike and I are going to be talking about Jaws.
Yeah!
From 1975, directed by Steven Spielberg. This movie was requested by Shelby, and we were planning on doing this movie soon, but since this was a request, we moved it to now!
Thanks for the request, Shelby. We appreciate it.
Yeah, so thank you, Shelby. This was a fun watch. It was great to revisit this film after so long because...
Oh, most definitely.
And you know, some people argue the fact that Jaws is not a horror movie.
I disagree. It scared the poop out of me.
I think it is. Maybe not in the traditional sense, but it still qualifies as a horror movie.
Oh, I agree. This is one of those movies where... It's not like, you know, a supernatural being or some, you know, psychotic killer or something like that.
Zombie monster, closet monster.
Zombie shark.
Zombie shark. That's a movie.
Yeah.
That actually is a movie. three-headed shark, two-headed shark. Those Roger Corman.
Yeah, they're no.
So bad.
That the CGI kinda... makes you want to... They're, rip your eyes out.
They're fun watches, but no, they're bad movies for sure.
But, I mean, this is basically, as it says in the trailer for the movie, it's basically a killing machine.
Yeah.
All it does is swim and eat and make sharks.
Little fishes.
So.
Nice quote there, Richard. It's hard to believe this movie released in 1975 because... Yeah. I always thought it was early 80s. And, well, this movie had a lot of impact on people thinking twice before going into the water, if going in at all.
Yep.
And what makes this scary, at least for me, is the invisibility of the shark.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see the shark through most of the film. And, you know, it wasn't planned that way, but that's just what they had to work with. But it totally worked for this film. And what you don't see is left up to your imagination, like we've said before. And no CGI.
Yeah.
All practical. So, Mike, I have a question for you. When did you first watch this movie, and did this movie impact you as well?
I first watched this movie 87, 88, and for a very long time after this, I did not want to go in the water.
I still don't want to go in the water.
And it's not really because where I lived at, we had a lot of water around us, but it was all fresh water. But there was something in the back of my mind that was like, that sumbitch is down there somewhere, and he's going to eat my ass if I get in the water.
Oh, I got something better. I was so afraid of this movie when I was a kid. I was afraid to get out of my bed because I thought Jaws was going to come around the corner on land in my house. That's how scary.
I don't know why. I just pictured like Jaws dressed up like the Terminator.
And he's got like alligator legs, little legs. He's creeping around the corner.
Oh my God. Okay,
there's a movie out there like that somewhere. I guarantee it.
Probably.
So for our top cast, we have Roy Scheider as Brody. It's so sad. In 2004, he was diagnosed with multiple melanoma.
Myeloma? Man, I didn't know that. That's terrible.
It's a type of cancer, I guess. And it was in June 2005 that he received a bone marrow transplant to treat the cancer. Unfortunately, he passed away February 10th, 2008 in Little Rock, Arkansas at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences Medical Center.
I know he passed on. I didn't know what he passed on from. That's a horrible way to go.
It really is, yeah. And movies that he's known for, he did this movie, of course, Jaws 2, Jaws the Revenge. Mm-hmm. He didn't want any part of those movies. In fact, Jaws the Revenge, he really didn't want to be a part of that movie. I had heard he took on another role in another movie so he could avoid doing that terribly horrible, awesome movie.
I'm just going to go right out and say it, okay? I love the first one. I love the second and third one. The fourth one, hell. It's part of the canon.
The one with Dennis Quaid? I think it was Dennis Quaid who played in Jaws the Revenge.
Yeah, these movies, like, you're talking the last time I watched any of them, last night, was like in 98, I think.
I just like the first Jaws. This one, nothing beats it. I mean, they had sequels and stuff, and they were fun little watches, but...
And they were fun, and they were good, and eventually we will do them.
Maybe.
It's going gonna doing revenge is gonna be
that's gonna be a tough one.
Interesting.
Which means that the episode will be a shit ton of fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so Roy Scheider, he also did, I know him from Jaws, but I really know him from the 2004 Punisher with Thomas Jane.
Yep.
And I fucking love that movie.
It's amazing.
He was, what's his name, Frank Castle's father in it. What a perfect part for him, too. He seemed like such a really nice guy and such a good actor. He was also in Marathon Man, and he did so many more movies.
Oh, yeah.
And then we have Robert Shaw, who plays Quint, and he died of a heart attack in 78, only a few years after this movie. He wasn't interested in playing the role of Quint. It took a lot of persuasion from his wife, Mary, before changing his mind. And he was a very established actor and was just a really talented guy.
Yeah. Actually, I think their backup plan, if Robert Shaw decided not to do it, was they're actually going to get one of the locals from Amity to play the part of
There's a guy that his character is actually based off of, and it's a guy actually the decapitated head you see come out of the boat. That's the guy. But I heard
hope
that
not
they
the
were
real one.
No, I don't think so. But no, Robert Shaw, he's done. I don't know much of what he... I know him from this movie, but he's done movies called The Sting, which is from 1978.
Which I've seen.
A Man for All Seasons from 1966. Mm-hmm. And another one called From Russia with Love that was in 1963. And he's done so much. His resume on IMDb is huge.
From Russia with Love,
I have no idea, to be honest.
Is that the Bond movie?
Oh, you know what? Actually, now that I think about it, I did read something where he did play in some James Bond movies.
Okay.
Or at least one of them. But other than that, I don't know any of this guy's work except for Jaws.
I think also, and I could be wrong, and Shelby, if I am wrong, I do apologize, but I think he did a lot of theater work as well.
Yeah, I didn't do too much research on him. The research that I did do was stuff that really interested me, and he's done so many movies, there just would not have been enough time for me to go and watch all of these before we did this episode.
And I mean, as far as anything else, you know, I mean, as far as how he was in Jaws, I think he was amazing in that part.
He was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
I think he just made the movie.
And then we have... Richard Dreyfuss, who plays
one of my favorite actors of all time.
He plays Hooper, and I feel like everyone knows him. He's another well-known actor for roles such as my personal favorite, Dr. Leo Marvin from What About Bob, starring Bill Murray. He was the voice of the centipede, James and the Giant Peach.
Yep.
And Mr. Holland's Opus, Stand By Me, he was the writer in that.
Yep.
And he's done a bunch of
my favorite movies of all time.
You have a lot of favorite movies of all time. God damn it, Mike.
Hey, don't even me.
But no, he's a really great actor. But anyway, I want to start things off here. Just these three main characters have accomplished so much since Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe not Robert Shaw because he passed a few years later.
Yeah.
But Robert Shaw was already an accomplished actor who's done so much before this movie came along. And he's a very interesting guy, and his voice alone is great. He was born in England, and Mike, I gotta say it, you didn't know that. You didn't.
No, I didn't. I feel bad.
Right before this episode, he mentioned that he didn't know he was from England. And then I said, you know what, Mike? I didn't know that either.
Well, the only thing I really can remember seeing him in other than...
Jaws. That one movie.
Yeah, the one movie with the he was in.
He was that guy.
Yeah.
he was that guy.
We just talked about it and I completely forgot it because I'm old.
No, because the mic is on. As soon as the mic clicks on, we forget everything. So anyway, moving on. He was born in England, but he unfortunately struggled with alcoholism most of his life. And he was in pretty poor health before he died. And what happened, I guess, was, and I got this straight from IMDb, so if it's not completely accurate, it's not my fault, so don't blame me. But no, what I guess happened, he was living in Ireland and he was taking a hiatus from work, and he was experiencing some chest pains while he was playing golf with some friends earlier that morning. And then while he was driving back to his cottage with his wife, he said that he was having chest pains again. So he was going to pull the car over and get out to just walk it off. He took a few steps just before he collapsed on the side of the road.
Ew.
And when he arrived at the hospital by ambulance, he was pronounced dead. So he died pretty quick, I guess. And it sucks because, I mean, this was, he died in, what did I say, 78?
Yeah.
Back in 78, I mean, alcoholism was looked a little bit differently back then than it is today. Today, he might have gotten help. He might have been saved. He might have been able to quit drinking. I know he wanted to quit drinking, but he had a problem, and that's too bad. It's really, really sad that that he had to go out this way.
I can tell you from personal experience that it's very hard to get that damn demon off your back.
Yeah, same here. So Peter Benchley, who was the main writer, well, one of the main writers,
mm-hmm.
was also the news interviewer guy in this film
yep.
there. You know, the little chipmunk-looking guy with glasses.
Yep, and that weird-ass mustache. That thing just, like, it kind of like, he made him look like one of the Canadian characters from South Park.
I don't remember a mustache. And I just watched this movie. This happens. We watch a movie and we forget. Now, unfortunately, he died from pulmonary fibrosis in 2006. And
well, holy shit, I didn't know he died.
It seems like everyone died almost in this movie. I mean, it was 1975, but I don't know. To me, it doesn't feel like it was that long ago. But I guess if you count the years up to now, I guess it is a long time.
Almost 50
also,
years ago.
Yeah, I mean, also considering the fact that these guys were already older dudes in 75. So.
Well, that's true. It's just so weird because, I half watched the documentary last night and all these people were on there and they looked, you know, healthy and good and whatever. But of course the documentary was, you know,
it was a few
ages ago.
Well, I mean the original documentary and then they did like an upgraded version one. But, we watched all the special features except for the two-hour documentary. I got an hour through it. Maybe you did too, Mike. We could not get through. It was so boring.
That, I will say there's a lot of really interesting info in it.
Yes, there is.
But it was just talking and 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 talking.
Before you know it, you're just snoring.
And I was like doing everything but standing on my head to stay awake.
Most of it was Spielberg just yapping the whole time. Constantly.
As far as a director, I think Spielberg's a genius. He's done some amazing stuff.
Oh, absolutely. But get him in a room where he's just talking.
Especially if he's talking about himself.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's another constantly just yapping about himself.
Yeah.
Well, this documentary was a long time ago, too. I think he's mellowed out a little bit since then.
And I mean, I will say I really like the parts with Richard Dreyfuss because he's just...
Oh, he's great to watch.
He just cracks me up, some of the stuff he comes up with.
But Peter Benchley, did you know that he was a former speechwriter for the former U.S. President Lyndon Johnson? It was IMDb, I saw it, and I was like, holy shit, that's fucking cool.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was the original author of the book Jaws.
I think so. Yeah. I want to say that he was the guy.
He actually, in a lot of interviews after the movie came out, actually said he regretted doing the book and the movie and whatnot because of the amount of sharks and whatnot that were killed because of the movie and the book.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, later on in life, became an advocate for the preservations of sharks and to stop shark finning in like Asia and whatever.
Interesting. I mean, that's understandable. This movie caused like a big uproar after it came out.
Oh,
no one wanted to go into the water. People were terrified of sharks. It gave sharks a really bad name. When in reality, I mean, yeah, great whites are terrifying, but like any other kinds of sharks and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know people that have gone scuba diving and they have been with sharks
and they are
not threatening at all. It's nothing. It's like not a big deal to them. But I mean, a great white, you want to be careful, but Jaws was a killing machine.
Right.
And this was a movie.
And I still maintain the fact that I really relate to the shark that eats somebody, though. If I was sitting in my house and somebody in a Speedo just came waltzing through the door, I'd bite their ass, too.
Or if it was a chick in a bikini, I'd gladly bite her ass.
Yeah.
Oh, that was stupid. I'm an idiot. Okay, anyway, moving on. Robert Shaw and Richard Dreyfuss. This was one of the things that my dad told me growing up. Not very much detail, but everybody, I think, knew that Robert Shaw and Richard Dreyfuss really couldn't stand each other. And the two argued all the time, and it resulted in some really good tension between Hooper and Quint, which was kind of good for the movie, and it shows in some scenes. But Dreyfuss later said that they didn't hate each other, and I guess he said that they only had one major disagreement on the set, but I don't know, because there's a lot of other people that have said differently. I mean, Robert was respected as an actor. Mm-hmm. His trouble with alcohol was a frequent source of tension during filming. And in interviews, Roy Scheider describes him as, he wrote a book and he described him as a perfect gentleman whenever he was sober. Mm-hmm. All he needed was just one drink and then he'd turn into a complete son of a bitch. A competitive son of a bitch. He was very competitive over really stupid, petty stuff.
Happens with a lot of people, a lot of alcoholics. They call it Jekyll and Hyde syndrome.
Yeah, I had that.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah, it's not something to fuck around with. If you have those issues going on, it could really get you arrested. It can get you dead.
Oh yeah,
it's very dangerous. You know, I mean, it's alcoholism. You're hooked to it. You don't think you have a problem.
Right.
All sorts of stuff. Right. And it's terrible.
Also with Robert Shaw, he, for whatever reason, from what I understand, he targeted Richard and just picked at him and picked at him and picked at him. Like,
he did, yeah. Actually, I have a story. According to this book by Carl Gottlieb, it's called The Jaws Log. Shaw was having a drink between takes, and he announced it at one point that he actually said, "I wish I could quit drinking." Much to the surprise and horror of the crew, Richard Dreyfuss gets up and he grabs Shaw's glass and he just throws it in the ocean. So Robert then allegedly bullied Richard for the rest of the shoot. I mean, he was offering him like $1,000 to climb the 70-foot pole on the boat and jump into the ocean, repeatedly calling Dreyfuss a coward whenever he refused it. One day, Shaw even sprayed him with a fire hose, causing an enraged Richard Dreyfuss to storm off saying, "That's it. I don't want to work with you anymore. Go fuck yourself."
Wow.
They had some issues. Now, when the music to this, the score, is absolutely brilliant. It's by John Williams. And we were just talking about this before the show. When he played the score, or that music, you know, the ba-dum.
Oh, yeah.
Steven Spielberg laughed and he said, "That's funny, John, really. But, you know, what do you really have in mind for the theme of Jaws?" And he thought he was joking.
Mm-hmm.
And Spielberg later stated that without John Williams' score, the movie would only have been half as successful. And according to Williams, it jump-started his career.
Yeah, well,
which is awesome.
It's really funny. I mean, John Williams has done, so freaking many.
Yeah, I saw his resume. It's huge.
Yeah. And actually, you hear a little bit of trivia for you. His son is the lead vocalist for the group Toto.
Really?
Yep.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
And awesome.
I was reading something about Toto and how they hated the song Africa. And John Williams' son, whose name eludes me at the moment, but he said, "If this song ever becomes famous, I'll run down the street in my underwear."
And sure enough, he must have done that.
It's like one of the most famous songs that they ever did.
It became a hit.
But yeah, that's John Williams' son. And but yeah, I mean, God, he did the score for Star Wars. Just so many different scores for so many great movies. And for the longest time, I didn't know it was him who did the score for Jaws. I honestly thought it was just something that the crew came up with. It's so simple.
Yeah, I never really knew who actually did the score either. So, it was really interesting to find that out.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And again, I mean, it's a simple score, but my God, I mean, it's one of the most iconic scores.
Yeah.
You know, in cinematic history.
This was really fun to go back and revisit because it gave us a chance to really look up some information and dig deep into some of the stuff that we never knew about Jaws.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I knew that Richard Dreyfuss and Robert Shaw had some issues, but my God, with the stories I heard, I didn't know it was that bad. I didn't know he was a big alcoholic or anything. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know that the name of the shark was Bruce. Named after Spielberg's lawyer. Well, I knew the name was Bruce. Yeah. I just didn't know that it was actually named after his lawyer. Fucking hilarious, by the way.
First name Bruce, last name Campbell.
Despite reports to the contrary, Bruce was actually tested in the water before it arrived in Martha's Vineyard.
Yep.
And it worked perfectly. But the tests were done in the non-salt water tank. mm-hmm. at Universal Studios. But once it was all placed in the actual ocean water, I guess the salt wreaked havoc with the shark's controls. Oh, and yeah. it just didn't work. It yeah. did not work. And a lot of this was because, I mean, that's why you don't see a lot of the shark in certain scenes.
But it worked out so freaking well.
It just made for a very suspenseful movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, I watched this just the other night, and I was just, there were a couple times I jumped.
Oh, yeah.
It still gets me. I haven't seen the movie in a long time, but I mean, I've got a photographic memory, so I remember things very vividly, and I remember Jaws, and there's still stuff in there that really got me to jump. The first day the model shark was used, it sank to the bottom of the ocean. It needed a great deal of maintenance and really didn't appear very terrifying at first. Spielberg actually quoted, "I had no choice but to figure out how to tell the story without the shark," and he reasoned that. It's what we don't see, which is truly frightening. Exactly. And it's completely true. Completely true.
Yeah, because like I've said before, anything that you can come up in your mind with, especially if you have a mind as depraved as mine is. I mean, it's like, the first time I watched the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
There is nothing that they could have put in that movie, special effects wise, that would have topped what was going on in my head the first time I saw that movie. There's just nothing there.
So, no, I hear you. And it's the same with Jaws. I mean, when this movie came out in 75, no one had ever... There was nothing to compare this movie to.
No.
It really frightened people.
Oh, yeah.
Till this day, it still frightens people.
Oh, yeah.
It's great. Shall we get into the movie plot, Mike?
Yes, we shall.
All right. So, it starts out during a party at the beaches of Amity Island. This woman named Christina, or Chrissy, whatever, she leaves with her boyfriend, I guess, or I think it's just some guy, who later becomes unconscious and goes skinny dipping. So it was funny. He can't even get his shirt off, I don't think, or he barely got his shirt off. He passes out.
Yeah, I've been there.
She just decided, God damn it, Mike, fuck. So she decided to just go skinny dipping anyway because, I don't know, I'm a chick and I'm free.
Because she was drunk too.
And while swimming out towards the near buoy, she's seized and grabbed by something below the surface that thrashes her around. And she tries to grab onto the buoy to pull herself up. So, and it's funny. That's one thing I forgot. I always thought that she got away.
No.
No, she doesn't get away. And I don't know why.
Parts of her do.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why I thought that, because it would have been kind of a weak opening, yeah. You know? But anyway, yeah, the force drags her underneath the ocean, and she's gone. She's gone.
She's very gone.
But man, what a great opening scene.
Oh, that.
And Spielberg shot roughly 25% of the film from the water level to provide the viewers that perspective as if they're treading water.
That whole part with her screaming and thrashing around.
Yeah. And I have to ask you, Mike, you must have thought of this. When they're filming her from the bottom and looking up swimming,
mm-hmm.
besides trying to see how naked she was, did you also think back to the creature from the Black Lagoon during this intro?
Oh, yeah.
Because it was filmed exactly the same. And I thought, if there was anything to compare anything in this movie to, bam, Creature from the Black Lagoon. That one scene.
I almost wonder if they did that as an homage to Creature.
Maybe. It seems like that might have been where Spielberg got the idea from, to film it like that.
It could be. And, it would make a lot of sense. Because, if you're going to do a movie like this, why not pay homage to...
Yeah.
The movie that started the whole fear of the water.
And that was only 25, 30 years before this movie.
Well, what?
Because that was it 52 or 51?
51 or 52 is when Creature came out.
We just did these movies.
I know. Oatmeal brain.
But no, it was perfect for an opening.
Yeah, no, it was seriously fantastic.
Very perfect for an opening.
Scared the crap out of me, I can tell you that much.
Well, Chrissy's reported missing, and her remains are later found on the beach by Chief Brody.
Along with a shit ton of crabs.
And the deputy. Yeah, that part was icky to me.
Icky?
The medical examiner informs Brody that she was killed by a shark, and Brody plans to close the beaches to ensure safety of the people. But, of course, is overruled by Mayor Dick Vaughn, dickhead, fuck. Oh, I couldn't stand this guy.
I wanted to hit him with a shovel.
A terrific actor, though. You really hated him, but that's what they wanted. That's what you wanted, and he did his job. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, Mayor Dick Vaughn, who fears that reports of a monster shark attack is going to ruin the the whole summer tourist season that's going on.
Right.
And the town's, their primary source of income. So I could see why, but at the same time, it's like,
you're putting
everyone at risk here. Yeah. Yeah. But of course, you know, it's still till this day, money's more important than safety, and that's all people fucking care about. So after the medical examiner falsely concludes that Watkins' death was on account of a boating accident, Brody reluctantly goes along with this explanation. He doesn't want to, but I mean, he's the new guy in town, the new chief, and he kind of feels like he has to, or at least you get that sense.
Right.
So later at the beach, the shark kills a young boy swimming on his raft, and swimmers struggled to get out of the water.
You know, for the longest time, I don't know why, probably because it's been so long since I've seen the movie, I thought it was his oldest son, Brody's oldest son, that was the one that got killed.
So did I. But he didn't.
It was the older lady there.
Yeah, yeah.
And her husband, whose son got killed. But I was like, I had it in my mind that it was, you know, and that's why Brody ended up going out on the boat with Quentin Hopper.
I mean, it would have made sense.
Yeah.
You know, but no, it wasn't. I mean, his son almost got killed.
Yeah.
Yeah, the boy's mother places a bounty on the shark after this. And, well, when her boy gets killed, that was quite bloody.
It was pretty graphic, especially for that time.
I mean, you didn't see his body, but you saw the raft and you saw, like, a whole shit ton of blood coming up from the bottom. For this time, that gore really shocked people.
There was some decent, albeit
there was
a little bit, but there was some decent gore.
It's where it needed to be.
Yeah.
And I thought it was quite realistic, if anything. They didn't overdo it.
No.
We'll get to it. But so, the mom puts a bounty on the shark, sparking an amateur shark hunting frenzy and attracting the attention of local professional shark hunter Quint, who offers to kill the shark for $10,000. They wanted to offer, what, $3,000? Now, did you remember the scratching of the nails on the chalkboard?
Yes, I did. I hated it. I hate it to this day.
I love that scene, though. He's, like, sitting there eating, like, I don't know.
Saltines.
Salted Rice Krispie treat.
No, he's eating saltines.
But it's great, though.
Clip your damn fingernails.
So two men plot to catch the shark by attaching a fucking roast.
This was one of the stupidest things I have ever seen in my entire life.
Well, this just goes to show that anyone will do anything for a buck.
What kind of redneck, dipshit, freaking jackass nonsense was that?
And he says, I hope we catch something because that's my wife's roast.
Yeah.
You're sleeping on the fucking couch, buddy.
Sleeping on the couch? Hell, you'd be sleeping out in the yard.
But yeah, they attach a roast on a hook hitched to a wooden jetty.
Damn nice looking roast, too.
Clearly, the plan goes awry when the dock is pulled apart by the shark, which almost takes one of the guys to his demise.
Swim!
But yeah,
swim,
he swims back, he makes it. Next, marine biologist Matt Hooper examines Chrissy's remains and determines unequivocally that she was killed by a shark, not a boat.
Well, this is not a boat accident. It wasn't any propeller. It wasn't any coral reef. And it wasn't Jack the Ripper. It was a shark.
I loved this scene when he was examining because it really rings true the way he was, like, acting. Where he's like, you know, give me a drink of water.
Right.
He's, like, sweating. It's as if he looked like he's never seen anything like that before, which he really hasn't. So he looked really, like, he was about to pass out and he was unnerved. Yeah, so I liked this scene.
It kind of put me in the mind of the first autopsy scene from Silence of the Lambs when
Clarice goes in and she's holding the napkin over her nose.
Yeah.
And it's very unnerving and fucked up and traumatic.
Kind of, yeah. I got that same feeling.
Yeah, now that you mention it, you pointed something out good for once, Mike.
I know, the old muddy water in the brain gets stirring every once and again.
No, that's true, though. I can totally see that now. Yeah. When the fishermen capture a large tiger shark, the townspeople believe it to be the culprit of the early killings.
That was a real tiger shark, too.
The case is now closed. Was it really? Because it looked like just... Are you sure?
I'm positive. What they were talking about it in the making of last night.
Huh.
It was a real tiger shark. They spent like $10,000 on it.
Wow.
Obviously, it looked really realistic.
Well, I was going to say it looked really hokey as shit and rubbery.
It was a real...
Oh, wow.
But they said it smelled so bad.
Oh, I well, yeah, probably fishy.
Yeah, it was something fishy about it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, That was a real shark.
Well, Hooper asks to examine its stomach contents, but Mayor Dick Vaughn refuses. Yeah, well, he believes that, you know, if it was responsible, it would still be in its digestive tract. Right. Or in its stomach or whatever. And still wouldn't have...
The little kid comes spilling out in front of God and everybody.
Yeah, at first I was a little pissed, but then when he says that, I was like, all right, he said something smart for once. That makes sense. So that evening, Brody and Hooper secretly open the shark's stomach, and they discover that there's no human remains in there, so that's not the shark. So they got to do something about it.
They found a license plate.
Rhode Island?
That was Louisiana.
Was it Louisiana? Yep. That's a long way. So
I kind of get where he's coming from about cutting the shark open in front of everybody, though. That'd be a real damper having a half-eaten little kid.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's what I was saying. I mean, if... Like, he said something smart for once.
Nah.
You know, like, yeah, no one wants to see that. That would be horrible. So they head out to sea to find the shark. Well, before they do, they go and they meet up with Robert Shaw. Oh, this part's so great because, man, Robert Shaw's, like, acting in this is just so... You don't see acting like this in movies anymore.
No.
He was, like, just out there. And this is the tension that you can kind of feel between him and Richard Dreyfuss, too.
Yeah.
It almost feels they're not even acting. You know, they're competing, or at least Robert Shaw is, when he grabs his hands.
Yeah, I don't think that there was a lot of need for them to overact in this part. Because
they didn't like each other.
They were not fans.
So anyway, after this scene, they decide they're going to head out to sea to find the shark. But instead, they find the wreckage of a boat belonging to this local fisherman, Ben Gardner. And yeah, Hooper explores the vessel underwater. Oh, okay. So that part where he grabs his hands and him and Richard, that comes later. I forgot about this scene. So him and Brody go out and explore this vessel. And Richard Dreyfuss's character, Hooper, goes underwater and discovers this sizable shark's tooth. It's a great white tooth. And it's fucking
big old
huge.
Honking tooth.
And it was from the damaged hull before he gets startled by Garner's corpse, or his head falling out through there. Scares the fuck out of him. He drops the tooth. He'll never be the head of his own corporation. I don't think he was really headstrong, Mike.
Heading on in the plot.
Let's head forward. Okay. He drops the tooth, and without evidence, Vaughn refuses to close the beaches or hire Quint, which is kind of stupid, because why the hell would they lie? Like, during this part, I'm going, you fucking idiot. Like, they're telling you this. Why won't you believe them?
What are our problems? I think that I am familiar with the fact that you are going to ignore this particular problem until it swims up and bites you on the ass. Now, wait a second.
Dave.
There are two ways to deal with this problem. You're either going to kill this animal, or you're going to cut off its food supply.
Larry, we have...
Oh, you don't have evidence. Okay, fine.
Well,
wouldn't
make for as good a movie.
So, okay, many tourists arrive on the 4th of July. This is the big day, and where a dorsal fin is sighted, causing mass panic, only for it to come on land and be discovered to be made of plastic. It was a prank that was done by these local teenagers. One of them was Brody's son, I think. What? No, it wasn't Brody's son.
No,
Brody's
son
is out there on his playing with his dinghy over...
And what they called the pond.
Yeah. Then they find these kids, and they were just doing a prank. And as people are calming down and recovering from the panic, right after, the shark enters a cove and tilts a rowboat over. It's funny, my dad always loved this part because this one guy who's like yelling out to the kids is like, "Hey, you guys okay over there?" I don't know why, but my dad used to crack up every time that scene would come on. And then the shark tips over the boat. He gets his leg ripped off, I think.
Yes,
he
does.
He gets killed pretty quickly. And Brody's son, Mikey, narrowly escapes the attack. But he goes into shock, and he's just, like, sitting there in the water. And Brody finally convinces Vaughn to hire Quint at this moment. So after, you know... I mean, his son gets out of the water. They get him out, but he's in shock, and they're trying to, break him out of it. You know, he's in shock. I would be, too. I mean, to see a shark that... I mean, I am deathly afraid of water, especially open water. Anyway, they convince Mayor Vaughn to hire Quint and give him the $10,000. And Quint reluctantly allows Hooper and Brody to join the hunt. I don't think he really wanted them to, but they go along. So the three set out to kill the shark aboard Quint's vessel, the Orca, which I think is an appropriate name because Orca is like one of the only animals that would try to kill a shark or fight a shark at least. Because
well,
orcas can be pretty fucking vicious and dangerous. Oh, yeah.
It was a little nod to Moby Dick.
So Brody is given the task of laying the chum line, but an enormous great white looms up behind the boat. And this is when you first get a really good look at the shark.
Yeah.
Like a really, really good look.
look on Brody's face.
I laughed when I saw that. I jumped a little because I always forget about that part. You know, because of the way it was filmed, he's just throwing chum out and then boom, there he is.
If Holy Shit had a face, that would be it.
He just jumps back so quickly and still, and he's got the cigarette dangling in his mouth.
We're going to need
boat. Yep, this is where the line, you're going to need a bigger boat,
and
comes from.
It like three times.
So, well, I think after that, he's like, you're going to get a bigger boat, right? We're getting a bigger boat, right? So Brody is given the task of laying the chum, and this is where Bruce jumps up behind the boat. So
the trio,
well, they watch it circle the orca, and Quint estimates its size as about, 25 feet in length, he says, with a weight over 3 tons. Can you fucking imagine that? That's a big-ass fucking shark. I mean, even to this day, that's a big-ass shark.
Dude, I'd be pulling my freaking impression of Jesus and walking my ass out of there.
I'd probably just curl up in the corner, hoping I don't get eaten. I don't know. I'd probably go into shock.
Curling up, you'd be an hors d'oeuvre.
Oh, God damn it, Mike. Fuck! So he harpoons it with a line attached to a flotation barrel.
That was a badass harpoon gun, too.
Yeah, it was. But the shark pulls the barrel underwater and disappears.
Show me the way to go home. I'm tired and I wanna go to bed. I had a little drink about an hour ago and it's gotten right to my head.
The men retire to the cabin where Quint relates his experience with sharks as a survivor of the sinking of the USS Indianapolis. This is his big, like, famous speech that he does in the movie. Right before this part, though, they're comparing scars and shit. And the one that Brody, he doesn't show, he just kind of lifts up. That's a real scar from a surgery that he had.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't remember what he had done. I knew I should have wrote this in my notes, but I thought I would remember, and I don't. I do know that was a real scar he had from a recent surgery that he had. But anyway, you know, when it came time to shoot this scene, though, where Quint relates his experience, Shaw attempted to do the monologue while he was drunk, as it's called for the men to be drinking late night in this scene. Nothing in that take could be used. I guess he failed it miserably from being drunk and probably goofed around too much or just didn't nail it. So Robert, I guess, was quite sad. And he ended up calling Spielberg late that night and asked if he could have another try at it. And the next day of shooting, Shaw's electrifying performance was done in just one take. And that's the take you see in this movie.
It was amazing.
It is amazing. It sucked me right in. I was like glued to the screen at this part. It was so well done. Okay, so the shark returns, damages the hull, and then slips away again. It reappears in the morning.
Damn shark Brody ninja.
Attempts to call the U.S. Coast Guard, but Quint, the motherfucker, destroys the radio, enraging Brody, and I can understand it, because doesn't he take an axe or something, and he's fucking, like, he just fucking goes up to it and just destroys it.
Yeah.
And he said something about, like, how are they going to know where we are now? How are we going to know where we are? Or something like that. It's like, you needed that.
Yeah.
But Quint, he's a badass guy who thinks he knows it all, and he wanted all the credit for himself, I think. He wanted to be the one to catch this shark.
And again, this kind of goes back to Moby Dick with, you know, him being the one that has to catch the whale.
Right.
And I think it was one of those situations where Quint's pride outweighed his brains.
Yes, exactly. That was going to be the next thing I said. I mean, it did, but at the same time, he really just wanted to be the one to do it.
Yeah, and after what happens to him, I think he kind of rethinks his...
He got more than what he deserved, I think. Because I forgot it how brutal that scene was. We'll get to it.
Yeah.
So after a long chase, Quint harpoons two more barrels to the shark. So now he's got fucking three barrels that weigh like a lot.
Five or six more, he looked like Pinhead.
God damn it, Mike. I hate you.
I hate you too, buddy.
So Quint harpoons two more barrels to the shark, mm-hmm. and the men tie them both to the stern, but the shark drags the boat backwards. I think this is the part where, because when they're tying it, Hooper gets caught in between the boat and the rope.
Looks like, it freaking hurts
He made it look like he was in, like, excruciating pain. I could only imagine.
Well, you figure, you're getting, you know, caught between a rope and the boat and a three-ton shark.
Okay, so the shark drags the boat backwards, forcing water onto the deck and flooding the engine at this point. And just little by little, more and more destruction as, you know...
That poor boat went through hell.
Poor Orca. Before Quint can sever the lines with a machete, because you see Quint go around and grab the machete that's attached to the wall, and he comes out like fucking Jason Voorhees. but then the stern cleats are yanked out, so he's just... This crazy-looking motherfucker who's standing there with a machete. I remember thinking, that's so awesome. Why don't I remember the machete part? He then heads toward the shore, hoping to draw it into shallow waters and suffocate it. Of course, we know that that doesn't happen. No. In his obsession to kill the shark, Quint burns out the Orca's engine. And with the boat immobilized, the trio then attempt a desperate approach. And this is where Hooper, he gets his scuba gear on, and then he enters the ocean inside this shark. Well, it's supposed to be a shark-proof cage, but you find out really fast, it's definitely... Not Bruce-proof.
No, I think he needs to take that back to where he got it.
I would ask for a refund.
Made by Acme.
But he's intending to lethally inject the shark with a hypodermic spear filled with this, what is it called? Strychnine? Is that what they called it?
Strychnine. Very powerful poison.
It's supposed to knock him out. But I gotta say, this is by far the best part of the movie. These underwater scenes were outstanding.
And super suspenseful.
I mean, it was dark at times and a little difficult to see, but it created a more immersive and atmospheric creature feature movie.
And the fact The fact that the only thing that you can hear through the entire thing is the score really creeps you out.
Not even the score. I mean, you can kind of hear like...
But it's
like,
muffled.
Muffled like you're underwater. Yeah. They give it that.
Which is genius.
It made me feel claustrophobic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I am claustrophobic too, so that this part definitely worked.
Oh yeah.
But man, the cinematography, this is some of the best work. I mean, I don't know tons about cinematography and filming and stuff, but just I think that this is the best. Oh, it has to be.
This is the reason why Steven Spielberg is such a genius when it comes to stuff like this. When you watch a Spielberg movie, there's some things that you are going to know for a definite.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It's going to have great cinematography, a great score, and great acting.
This is what really jump-started Spielberg's career. Because after this, what did he do? Was it E.T.?
Before he did this, he only did one movie, which was Sugarland Express.
Okay, but right after Jaws.
After this, I think it was E.T.
It was the same thing. It had an amazing score. Oh, yeah. It had amazing cinematography. I mean, everything about that.
Great actors. So much.
That was what? Dee Wallace's one of her first big performances.
Yep.
And then, of course, little cute and adorable Drew Barrymore.
Yep.
Well, we'll get into that another time.
Cute and adorable little E.T.
But yeah, this is what jump-started Spielberg's career.
Oh,
and with scenes like this, I mean, till this day, this is great work.
Yeah,
I mean, holy shit, 1975?
Almost 50 years later, and this still can put that feeling of dread into the pit of your stomach. That's totally impressive.
So the shark attacks and demolishes the cage from behind.
Oh, yes, he does.
Did you forget, because while he's in the cage, he can't see the shark at one point. I mean, you see it at first, you can compare the shark to the cage.
Mm-hmm.
But when he can't find it, it shows him from the front, I think. Like where you could see the front of Hooper. And then right behind him, a glimpse, you see the shark hit the cage.
Yep.
That scared me.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I had forgotten. There's nothing to lead you. Like, you know how movies all have like a score where it'll get like more and more intense.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the jump. And you can kind of expect it. I didn't expect this. No. There was nothing leading up to it. It was just, okay, there's the fucking shark. That was scary.
Well, the whole thing is with the score for this movie, there was two parts of the score. There was the light and jovial, you know, the part where they're like sailing and everything's great and wonderful.
I'm sailing!
And then there's the part where Bruce is coming to eat somebody's ass, and that's about it.
Ahoy! I'm sorry. I love What About Bob. Oh, but yeah, yeah. Causing Hooper to drop the spear before he can inject it. As soon as he dropped that spear, I said out loud, "Of course, of course."
I said out loud, "Oh fuck!"
So when the shark becomes entangled in the wrecked cage, we're never going to get through this scene because every couple words, I keep thinking back.
Yeah.
There was a shark that they used that actually got caught. Did you see that part in the documentary? Mm-hmm. The shark actually got caught in the cage and sunk down below to the ocean floor with the cage.
Yeah.
Did it kill the shark? I think it did. Either way, that was... I
surmise that it did, unfortunately.
That was a real shark.
Yeah.
And, well, one thing I have to take away from the movie, I mean, it doesn't ruin it, but you can tell that the shark that got stuck in the cage, which is supposed to be Bruce,
mm-hmm.
was much smaller.
Yeah.
You can totally tell that that was a small shark because when it shows, you know, actual Jaws or Bruce, when he's underwater, when he first floats by, when he when he swims by,
through the brush,
that shark is like three times the size of the one that it showed getting caught in the cage. But anyway, it gets entangled in the wreckage cage. Hooper escapes. I mean, you don't know this until later, but I guess he hides in the seabed somewhere, but you assume he's dead.
Right.
I forgot that he lived because, yeah, you don't see him again. And then the shark leaps onto the boat, which was a little humorous for me because it's like, holy fuck.
And took a bite out of Quinn.
And it attacks it directly. It's eating the boat. It's like, it's eating wood, crushing, you know, everything. And Quint slides down the deck because the boat's tipped. Mm. I guess he couldn't hold on. And he gets completely just crunched. By the shark, devoured alive.
He got his ass ate.
The blood-curdling scream he does, and there's no music. No, there's no score. Just hear him screaming, and I thought that that was fucking awesome.
And then the blood coming out of his mouth.
And all over his teeth. Yeah. Now, it showed on some of the deleted scenes, if you watch. There's, I think, at least three takes of this it shows.
Mm.
Holy fucking Christ. There's one scream that he did that I know that Spielberg probably wanted to leave into the movie, but it might have been over the top. He screams like a girl. It's like a high-pitched woman scream.
I wonder if that happened when he got to the dingle.
It pierced. God damn it, Mike! Oh. But anyway, no, it pierced like the speakers. It was so loud. Yeah. It like rattled it. And take after take, he had to do this. And in the deleted scenes, the takes of Quint screaming is just, wow. Like every one of them was fucking good.
Oh, yeah.
Like, maybe they just didn't know which one to use, and they just picked this one, because they were all really good.
Maybe they did the professional way of eeny, meeny, miny, moe.
I really hate you sometimes. God damn it. You see what I gotta put up with here? Okay, so he gets devoured by the shark. You can hear the shark eating him. You can hear the sounds of the crunches, almost, and just the blood-curdling scream. And when the shark attacks again, Brody, because the boat sinks... Quint's gone, clearly. He takes him right down below the water.
Yeah, no, there's nothing left to Quint.
And I mean, that's a great scene, too, because you actually see him in the shark's mouth going under the water. I wonder if that scene was dangerous to film.
I don't know.
Because he's in that shark's mouth.
I mean, it was a great, not so great for Quint, but it was still a pretty damn great scene.
Damn it. So
Jesus Christ.
So then Brody takes Quint's rifle and climbs to the sinking orca's mast.
This scene was awesome.
It was great. One of the best scenes. I mean, the ending here, like right when Hooper goes into that shark tank, it's just all downhill from there. It's just some of the best filming, the best scenes, the best quotes. It's great. So the shark, with the tank still in its mouth, because was it Quint that threw it to... No. It was Brody. Because the shark... Oh, that's right. Why isn't this in my notes? Brody is inside the cab of the boat. Mm-hmm. And the shark just crashes right through.
Oh, yeah.
That startled me. And Brody's like, what the fuck? You know, jumps back. He manages to get one of those, like, tanks into...
Yeah, it's
like
compressed air.
Compressed air tanks into Jaws' mouth. And I guess it got stuck there because as he he's, you know, swimming towards Brody, you could see that tank in his mouth, mm-hmm. which, again, another great scene.
Oh, yeah.
Because the way that it's filmed, I mean, that shark looked real. There's still a lot of parts of this shark that looks real. I mean, there were some scenes where you could tell it was mechanical, but it's still terrifying, even if it is mechanical. And a lot of these other shots, it did not look mechanical, especially the underwater scenes. Mm-hmm. That didn't look, it looked like a real fucking shark.
Yeah.
So Bruce begins swimming towards Brody, and Brody shoots the tank. And right before he shoots the tank,
smile, you son of a...
Best line. Yep. One of the best lines. And then just boom. And it explodes, blowing the shark literally into pieces. Just fucking chum going everywhere. Just
he turned into a chunky shark.
Oh, it was great. And then Hooper swims to the surface. Him and Brody use these barrels and make like a little raft or something. Mm. Then they swim back to shore. And that's the end of the movie. It was great.
The entire time they're swimming back to shore, I was like, I just had in the back of my head, another fucking shark's going to come up and like eat their ass at the end of the movie.
See, now that's the kind of stuff that happens these days, like with the Meg.
Mm.
Remember the Meg? They caught the Meg, and then one that was like three times as bigger comes out and fucking bites it and eats it.
It was the Meg and then the bigger ass Meg.
Well, you know, I got to say, this is like werewolf movies to me.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of them, a lot of them really suck. And why do they mostly suck, Mike?
Because CGI.
Because a lot of it is CGI shit.
Crappy and one of graphics.
One of the best things about this movie was that there was no CGI. The shark was all practical, and they used three Bruces they had.
Actually, one of the Bruces is still around.
It is, yeah. It still works.
And it actually is hanging up in front of a junkyard, and I think, I want to say, they said Van Nuys, California.
Wow.
Yeah.
Some Jaws nut must have bought it.
Yeah, something. It was really cool looking, though. It's like right above where the entrance to the junkyard is. It's just kind of hooked up there.
That should be in a museum or something.
Yeah. There's a guy who actually has been extensively collecting Jaws memorabilia stuff from the movie and whatever since he was a kid. Like, he has that harpoon gun that Quint had.
Wow.
And a bunch of other stuff. He has the largest collection of Jaws memorabilia in the world.
I'd love to have some of this stuff. I mean, who wouldn't, though, right?
I think two of the original Bruce are still around, but they're non-working.
Yeah.
I think one of the ones that isn't working anymore is the one at the junkyard.
Okay, yeah.
And I think the one that is working, I want to say it's at Universal Studios, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. So, after seeing this movie, Mike, what did you think of it after revisiting it? How was it? And this was, I got to throw out that this was the restoration that we watched. So, this is my first time watching the restored version of this
Me
movie.
Too.
Because the last time I saw this, believe it or not, was VHS.
Same here.
It was on a VHS, and I think the last time I watched it was with my dad.
Yeah.
And which is a little sad for me to think about, because I grew up with this movie, watching it with my dad. It was one of my dad's favorite movies. Even a couple years before he passed on, he still would say that nothing beats Jaws.
Yeah.
It's the best movie till this day. Nothing's ever going to top it. So, watching the restored version, what'd you think of it?
It's like we were talking before we started the podcast. It had been since like 98 since I had seen this movie. And again, the last time I had watched it was on VHS, which I always thought they did a great job of what they had.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
When they did the VHS. Watching the restored version was like watching it for the first time.
Yes. I mean,
there was so much, it was so crisper, so much clearer. The score just came through so well.
So much better.
There were a couple pitfalls throughout the movie because of the restored version.
There's that little, supposed to be like a little jump scare where someone's swimming behind like a kid or a person, and you can totally tell that it's a person with like a swimmer's cap on, whereas in the original like VHS version you couldn't tell what the hell it was, you just saw like this figure in the water. But the restored version made it so crisp and clear. Oh, yeah. It was like, okay, you could tell that that's a person.
Well, again, it also harkens back to like the restored versions of the Universal Monsters. There were scenes where you could actually, you know, you could tell that it was a set and whatever.
Didn't ruin the movie, though.
No, absolutely not. And it didn't ruin this movie either. I loved that it was restored. It was so much easier on the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
They did a mini doc on the restored version of it. And it was really interesting because they'd show like the original cut of the movie, and then they show the restored version of it.
Right, yeah, that was fantastic.
It was amazing to see the side-by-side comparison.
Drives me crazy, though, because I wouldn't have the patience for something like that. I barely have as I've said before, I barely have enough patience to edit this fucking episode.
Episodes. You do an amazing job.
So I appreciate it. At least somebody notices.
But, yeah.
Yeah, the restored version was very, very well done. And seeing that side by side was pretty spectacular.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, bottom line, I love this movie. You know,
we're going to give a high ratings.
This movie has, even though I haven't watched it in so long, this movie is never far from my thoughts. It was one of the first, like, natural horror, you know, scary movies, you know, nature kills people type movies that I remember seeing. And it's just, it's so well done and such a great cast. Mm-hmm. Score's great, whatever.
There are still some good shark movies, but they're very far and few. I mean, I remember the first time I saw Deep Blue Sea with Thomas Jane.
Yeah,
I did like it. I did. I remember at the time thinking, this movie's great. I didn't notice how bad some of the CGI is when I first watched it. But now when I watch it, because I think the last time I saw Deep Blue Sea was a couple years back. And I remember thinking, okay, the movie's done great. The acting's great. Mm-hmm. Some of the scenes are great, like when the shark bites the dude's arm off.
Yeah.
When the shark just scares the fuck out of me and jumps out and grabs Samuel L. Jackson's character after he's making that awesome speech
like, holy shit.
It scared me, but I also laughed at the same time. But no, there was some great stuff in that. But then there's the parts where you see the sharks underwater coming at Thomas Jane when Thomas Jane, like towards the end.
Right.
And it's like, okay, that looks like a fucking cartoon fish. That's terrible. So, but they didn't use all CGI in it. No. They used some practical effects, which, you know, it was pretty good.
It wasn't a complete CGI fest.
No. And I got to say, the movie The Meg was great. And most of that was CGI, I think.
Yeah. But you also got to figure between, you know, the time Deep Blue Sea.
And then, it was very different. Yeah.
There's a lot of time between them for them to improve what they were doing.
Yeah, because the CGI that they had around Deep Blue Sea, there were some pretty shitty fucking shark movies.
Remember that movie, Virus?
No, I don't.
Oh, don't.
But there's not a lot of shark movies I really particularly care for. I heard the movie The Reef is done really well.
I've actually seen that. I liked it.
I heard the score is amazing. I heard the cinematography is even more amazing for the underwater scenes and looking at all the coral at the, I forgot where they're at, the Great Barren Sea.
Great Barrier Reef.
Great Barrier Reef. The Great Barren Sea.
but there was a couple of shark movies that came out around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
47 Meters Down, which I really like.
Yeah, that's a good movie. I like that. Yep.
Had another one called The Shallows.
Yeah, there's actually two 47 Meters Down movies.
Yes, I just actually...
it's confusing, because they're both almost the same story. Yeah, they're both pretty much the same thing.
The first one came out in 2017, the second one came out in 2019. I second one here not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the first one. I thought it was really good, and I thought The Shallows was pretty good.
I didn't like that one, but that's just because it bored me. Sure, of course, it would ring true, like if you were stuck on a rock out there.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, they made a movie about that, and I thought
pants and die.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought
they did a great job, but to me, it just bored me a little bit. Shark was scary, though. Looked good, I thought. Yeah. But really, the reason why we're mentioning these movies is to compare. If you're going to compare it to Jaws, Jaws is always on top.
Yeah, I mean, nothing...
That's my opinion, but like seriously, Jaws, nothing beats it.
Nothing is ever going to top Jaws as far
Jarls.
As... Jarls. Jowls.
Jowls.
It's never going to... Nothing's ever going to top that. I mean, it was the, and still is, quintessential shark movie.
So with that being said, let's get into our final ratings.
Okay. So I'm going to give this movie a 9.5 out of 10. I'm not going to give it a perfect score because, again, I'm basing it on the movie itself, not on the nostalgic factor. If I was based on a nostalgia factor, it'd be like a 92. And the only reason I'm giving it a 9.5 is, even though it wasn't anything of their real doing, and it did actually end up adding to the whole of the movie, the technical difficulties with Bruce, and there are certain times you can really tell that it's fake, kind of take it down for me a little bit. But yeah, other than that, 9.5.
Well, here's my final rating, you sick bastard. 9.5 out of 10.
Great minds think
alike. And here's why. There's a lot of movies from past eras that don't hold up over time. But
grab a copy, guys.
This one does. Shut up, you fucker. This movie is just as suspenseful as it was when I first saw it. I was blown away by the absolute suspense it invoked in me. That iconic moment when Chrissy goes skinny dipping in the dark, it's utterly haunting. It still is till this day. You know the horror of what's going to happen, and that buoy dinging in the background still gives me chills.
Mm-hmm.
Spielberg captures pure terror in that scene, and as the shark hunters venture off to try to kill the great white, you start to feel like a part of their adventure.
Quit playing with your dinghy!
God damn it, Mike. And you fear for them. You get excited with them, and you dread what will happen next. Now, when that fishing line starts spinning, your heart starts pumping. It builds the suspense. And the score, oh, it's a masterpiece. That score, I mean, whenever I even go near water, I always hear that music. That ba-dum, ba-dum. John Williams nailed it. He nailed it.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that the dynamics of the characters work brilliantly in this. The differences in the characters' personas is that they rub each other the wrong way, they disrespect each other, and they get under each other's skin. But in the end, they're there for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they develop a bond that comes as a surprise. One of the best reasons to watch this movie, though, Robert Shaw's performance. He's just, every time this guy's on the screen, it's a treat. It's mm-hmm. great to watch him. And you, like I said earlier, you hardly ever see these types of personalities in movies anymore. So at times, you can tell, though, that the shark isn't real, like you said, Mike. And it's a bit hokey here and there because you can tell it's mechanical.
Right.
There was one scene where Jaws is out of the water and you see him like moving his jaws just like back and forth. It almost looks like a mechanical breakdown malfunction or something.
Right.
So there's a couple things, but it doesn't take that much away from the movie. With all that being said, this movie isn't perfect, but it's damn near close. I think Jaws overall just completely absorbs you. This movie stands the test of time as one of the best films of its type to have ever been made. And yeah, that's my final rating, a 9.5 out of 10, being the best shark movie still to this day. And one more thing I have to say, this was a request, and I'm really happy that because this is our first request, I'm really happy that someone requested something that we could give a good rating for. Mm-hmm. As our first request. It was told that Shelby liked this movie. It was her favorite. She mentioned that Robert Shaw was her most favorite actor.
No, we certainly hope we did it justice.
I hope so. Most of the stuff that we talked about was a lot of the stuff that mostly interested us.
Right. No, we're not doing a history lesson on Jaws.
No, it's simply just for fun, and it's stuff that interests us, and we give our take on it, and we give what we think a good rating would be for the movie. And like you said, Mike, if this was based on nostalgia, this would be a 10.
Oh, yeah.
This would be right at the top for me because this is nostalgic for me. I grew up with this movie. It meant a lot to my dad. My mom even liked it too. It was just one of those movies I grew up watching in my house. So this is a big, big, big part of my childhood. It's a big part of your childhood too.
Yeah.
It's a really great movie, and I'm really happy that we got a chance to revisit it, especially for the podcast that we do. Now moving on, Gorometer. I gave it a 3. One for because of the kid and the blood in the water there on the raft. And then I gave it a 2 because of Quint. Because holy shit, I mean, that was good. But there wasn't so much gore, you know? I mean, I had to give it a 3. I mean, because if you think about it, I mean, what was the last episode that we did before this one? Wolf Cop. Wolf Cop, I think I gave a 6.5 or a 6. And if Wolf Cop got a 6, there's no way that Jaws could top a movie like that.
No.
Or even come close to a 10 with Terrifier.
No.
But no, it did have its fair amount of gore, and for 1975 was good. So I think a 3, you know, it did have some gore.
I'm going to give it a point higher for one.
You really love topping me, don't you? You really do. But we all know that there's never enough, for me, it's never enough gore.
I'm going to give it a 4, but I'm going to give it a 4 on the sole reason of when that fucking head popped out of the damn boat.
Okay.
Completely forgot all about that part. And when I was watching that other night, that fucking head popped out. And I was like, Jesus Christ, I forgot that.
That's fair.
And that head, it just looked so damn gross, you know.
And it's funny, it didn't like jump out. It just kind of slowly rolled out. Kind of
popped out. I was like, hello.
And then the score kind of kicked in too. Yeah. So that part was a bit of a jumper. I loved it.
Yeah, I was like, God, I forgot about that. And it was like really well done. Oh, it was yeah, so
it
grody.
Looked like a real head. Yeah. It really did.
With the freaking eye missing.
Yeah, there was nothing hokey about that scene at all.
And I guess they modeled that head exactly after the
guy from Amity there. Yeah. Yep.
So that it was gross.
But no, this movie, seriously, so good.
Yeah.
You know, great cinematography, great the locations and stuff where they filmed this and everything is just great.
Yep.
Everything about this movie was great. Do you get any more final thoughts before we get out of here?
I have a little bit of a final thought. It's actually...
You're not going to quote another poem or something, are you?
It's actually a story about my brother.
Okay.
God rest his soul. When he was little, he saw this movie, and he was absolutely terrified afterwards because he thought that Jaws lived under his bed.
Okay.
So,
dude, and when you're kids, anything lives under your bed.
It is just, the entire time I was watching this last night, I was thinking back to that, and it just got me laughing.
That's great. That's a great memory.
Yeah, I was just kind of thinking to myself of... From a logical standpoint, there's no water under there, so... But, yeah, for some reason, he just thought that that Jaws lived under his bed.
Dude, when you're a kid, logic goes out the window.
Oh, yeah.
Anything lives under the bed or lives in the closet. Well, in my case, I thought Jaws was coming around the corner in my hallway.
With little alligator feet.
Little alligator feet. Oh, God, it's like... It was a shark attack?
I think that's what it was. You're talking about the cartoon show there?
Yeah. The shark
Street
dude.
Sharks.
Street Sharks. That's what it was. Yeah. It's kind of like that version.
That was... That is fucking horrifying.
Well, my final thoughts are, I just want to say after almost 50 years, Jaws is a really, really fresh and timeless classic. It truly is. And if you haven't seen it by now, then you really, really should. For old-time thrills, brilliant cinematography, and outstanding practical effects. I mean, outstanding practical effects for this time. Go watch this movie.
Especially with a malfunctioning shark.
Oh, my God, yes. And it's just a remarkable movie. It's great. Thank you all for listening to our 29th episode of the Chainsaw Enema Show.
Wow, 29 episodes.
Again, we want to thank Shelby for requesting this movie. We had a lot of fun with it, and we really hope you enjoyed it as well. Thanks again. Like we've said, you know, and you can listen to our previous episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you could find podcasts pretty much. And if you got any movie requests, you can email MisfitMike at...
MisfitMike1986@gmail.com.
Or send us a Facebook message on our Facebook page. For our next episode, we actually know what we're doing. Our next movie is going to be Evil Dead Rise.
Double yeah!
And we're really excited to visit that one. A little bit more modern movie came out last year, right? 2023?
Yes.
At the end of 2023. So this is going to be a pretty fresh new movie that we're going to be doing.
It's going
to
be fun.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the franchise. I grew up with these movies ever since I was like 13, 14 years old. I grew up with them. And yeah, you did too. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So this one's going to be fun. Maybe we'll work our way backwards with these movies. Start with Rise and then work our way back every so often.
That'd be cool.
It's going to be fun. Be cool. It's going to be a good time. And... Remember, rate us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is you listen to podcasts. Don't forget to lock your doors and windows. Check the closet and look under the bed, because there could be a shark. Until the next time, I'm Johnny B. Ghoul.
And as always, I'm Misfit Mike.
And always remember to keep the horror alive.